And yes, it is indeed Off Planet Radio, but it's not Off Planet Radio, the show tonight. It is Man Talk 6 on Off Planet Radio. I'm Randy Moggins, and in the background here, I have with me my two esteemed guests, actually co-hosts. But I don't know how to define all these roles we have, but what the heck. It is basically a concept of three talk show hosts getting together and tossing around issues of the day, things that are important in life and stuff. And it is the first day of spring here in the Western Hemisphere. I suspect it's a different down where Vinny is. It's still cold, and it is also International Extraterrestrial Abduction Day. I didn't know this. I was driving home from work tonight, and our local public radio station was playing really weird music, UFO music. And I'm like, what's going on? And they said, it's International Extraterrestrial Abduction Day. It appears this started at a festival in Toronto several years ago. And so now it's officially somewhere, somehow, International Extraterrestrial Abductions Day. That in itself is so creepy that I have nowhere else to go with a monologue, so I bring up my guest from...
I have a joke that goes with that.
You have a joke that goes with that? This is... okay, great. Jump right in, Vinny.
How do aliens repair their damaged spacecraft?
I have no idea.
With abduct tape.
That would be the voice of, he is the RoboCop of Gonzo Media, and our good friend Vinny Eastwood is here with me from north of me in Canada, also known as America North. He's the truth warrior, David Whitehead. Good evening.
Hey, guys, what's happening? Glad to be here.
And this is the maiden voyage of Man Talk Project on Off Planet Radio on SpreakerRadio.com. We did one live broadcast about 3 weeks ago, and it was difficult to say the least, but we'll see how it goes tonight. There are social media things that I'm still trying to work through. We are broadcasting live on Spreaker.com. We're also on Facebook and over at offplanetmedia.net. And there are some people in the chat room there. I will monitor as much as I can the various web pages. And so, guys, it's been a long time since we've done this. The last time we were supposed to do this was in November. And I commenced into my dark soul of the night and got ill and took several months to recuperate. And so in the meantime, we sort of put the show on hiatus. But it's good to have you both back. The way this all began, for the listeners who don't know, is that I was scheduled to appear on Vinny Eastwood's show. And so was David. We got double booked. And so in a moment of... insane brilliance, we concocted this idea that this would be a format for a talk show, and we've been kind of pursuing it ever since. The concept is basically rotating between each one of our shows, and each host would host it, and then we do this like once a month. Well, we'll see how that goes, because, you know, schedules and things like that sometimes have a way of just completely screwing with your mind. Guys, give us an update on where you've been, what's been going on with both of you. Let's start with Vincent, because he, he's become an honest man.
I've become an honest man. Is that what happens when you get
That's what Americans say anyway.
Well, how come there's a 52% divorce rate in America then?
See, look, he's already honest enough to share the true statistics.
Well, you know, marriage is an institution, isn't it? You know, and just like any other institution, like law or doctor or anything like that, it's been corrupted in the mainstream while there's a really actual, brilliant, real thing that exists that barely anybody ever sees in the sitcoms or TV shows or anything like that, because they're just not that interesting, you know? It's not interesting unless there's huge quantities of conflict and terrible things going on between each other. But, you know, real life ain't like that. It's not entertaining if you're having fights and everything with each other. It's actually really sad. And you got to learn how to get over that sometimes. And hopefully, if you're very lucky, you, like me, you'll find someone who loves you, like really, really loves you, and will put up with all of your BS, know that you're going to say sorry after you've done something stupid or whatever. Basically, you accept all of their faults, they accept all of yours, and you agree to work on them together. That's what marriage is.
What do you say after that? In a lot of ways, though, the flip side of all of that is that there's a merging of strengths and weaknesses, and the ideal is counterbalance of each other's differences. So that is actually a very long process of growing together, the idea that it's the twin soul, the male-female aspect. And so, you know, the strong side of that is that you're now a complete human being, having completed your soul half.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, how does a double helix work? You know, you got two rafts of the human genome code going up along one side, and they both twist and turn around on each other. And without one another, you'd be useless. I'm not saying that all single people are useless, but you know, far from it, especially for prowling bachelors. But the other element here is it's about wholeness, about completeness. If you don't have a true, deep, meaningful relationship with your significant other, you feel empty. Sometimes you get lonely. Other times you enjoy the freedoms that you have of being single and what have you. But you grow to appreciate what you have rather than appreciate what you're missing out on.
Yeah. David, do you want to weigh
in? And it's also, that's great, because it's also that when you're entering into a relationship with somebody else, you're in a situation where you can either choose to give love or to try to take love. And of course, it has to be a balanced thing where it's actually something that's shared. And I find it's interesting about the concept. And I mean, we use that word love, and there's a lot of connotations that go with that. I think we've covered this before, but basically where there's the idea of just this sort of blindless reliance on somebody else to be the one to fulfill that emptiness for you, as opposed to being a holistic, balanced individual on your own. And hopefully you can link up with someone that is also a holistic, balanced individual. And then you're now sharing that frequency or that expression of consciousness and energy that we call like true love. But when you hear what's coming out from, you know, pop music and sort of the pop culture industry, they've literally created an industry out of love, and they've created this whole fabricated expression of that, which is that you have to go and find somebody to complete you, and you need to, you're nothing without it. And you hear all the songs, you're like, I'm nothing without you. But it should be more about I'm everything, and I'm expressing the wholeness of my being when I'm around you, because our relationship is giving me the opportunity to connect to the deeper aspects of myself that maybe I can't see on my own. So in a way, there's a sort of a student-teacher relationship that has to take place, and that has to keep working simultaneously back and forth. So that's just my view on it. And I think that when people are pursuing a relationship of any kind, whether it's a romantic or intimate relationship on that level, or whether it's just a friendship-type relationship, it's important to always come at it like that, come at it from a balanced perspective where you're learning more about how to express love and how to give it, as opposed to always trying to steal it and take it and say, oh, I want everybody to love me. It's all about me, me, me. And the problem is we get so sucked into the me, me, me. And if you have two people in a relationship that are in that dynamic, well, nobody's really going anywhere. And I think that maybe is part of the divorce rate. It really doesn't have anything to do with the concept of a relationship like that. It has more to do with the way people are trained to think about it.
I think, too, a lot of it goes back to the media models that are part of the cultural conditioning. When I was I grew up in a really small town, and growing up, divorce in that time was a scandal. It was considered a tragedy and a scandal, and it was not viewed well. We moved into like the 70s and the 80s, and if you watch media at that time, you'll notice what the TV shows began to model was women's liberation came in, and divorce rates started to go through the roof, and the once so-called nuclear family basically was split, and you then had single households and latchkey children. And yeah, we've talked about all this stuff before, but a lot of the point is that today what you have in the culture is just it's serial polygamy, basically. You just a succession divorce in most social circles, especially in like Hollywood, the entertainment industry, that's just considered a given. You'll have several wives. There was a wow. I've got a guy with a motorcycle. everybody gets to hear it. It's just out there. It's a big ass microphone, man. It pulls up everything. But what was I saying?
The divorce rates and
yeah, the whole culture has been retooled several times to where now it's like there was a quote by a teenage girl on a blog somewhere that I saw, or maybe it was on Facebook, and her desire at the time was to be Justin Bieber's first wife. Now, aside from the silliness of that, for just a minute, bear with me. There was something in that statement that was very telling. She understood that Justin Bieber will have many wives. She just wanted to be the first.
Are we turning into some kind of Middle Eastern thing, you know, polygamy is sort of like in now, except instead of having multiple relationships and wives at the same time and actually maintaining those marriages, you just marry one after the other after the other.
Yeah, exactly. That's
married
what
divorce,
doing.
And married actually, divorce. And what happens to the man who in many cases is the provider through significant successive divorces?
He's broke.
And not only is he broke, but his life work has been sucked away, pun intended. And there's this element here as well when you think about it. What does that do to any children that are in those relationships? I mean, the social services in the state tend to favor the mother. So what you're doing is you're more or less defathering the human race to the Americans in this particular context anyway. And as a result of not having a whole lot of strong male role models in their life, a lot of the kids, this gives rise to this whole single mom phenomenon, which I guess a whole lot of people in politics particularly really like, because it gives them an excuse and somebody to demonize and attack so that they can go after your kids.
Yeah, they definitely don't want the kids to be raised by a family unit. Or a community anymore. There used to be an old saying that it takes a community or a village to raise the child so that they can gain knowledge from multiple sources. But today we're so divided and fractured. I mean, most people don't even talk to their neighbors, let alone even their own families, getting together and having the old, you know, family dinner where everybody sort of breaks down and talks about their day. And, you know, and there's something healthy with having that place that you can go where you can talk and you can share and you can even argue a little bit and then have some fun and, you know, whatever. But that's kind of falling apart because it's not an effective model for the type of society that they're bringing in one bit at a time.
Well, because of the way that law has been written in the West, and that would be all of us who live in the British common law governments, The implication is, when you begin to study contract law, that the state is the owner of your marriage. Basically, marriage with a marriage license is a contract between a man, a woman, and the government. And that's where you get the idea of divorce. I mean, the divorce is something very different now than it was in like biblical times or ancient times, where, again, that was basically putting a wife away, usually because of infidelity. Now it's a matter of convenience, because the state is the overseer of fiduciary responsibilities for the marriage itself, the custodian of the children. That's how family services are brought into this, because in their view, they are the proper legal guardians of the children and of the marriage itself. So you were basically renting your wife and renting your family from the government.
Now, if it's a marriage license, what happens if you're drunk and get pulled over by police? What happens to your driver's license? They take it off you for 6 months. What are they going to do? You know, ban you from being married for 6 months or something like that as punishment for being married while drunk?
Well, then the divorce rate would be like through the roof, man. It'd be, it'd be just like 100%.
I mean, if you have to be that drunk that already for the duration of your marriage, you would assume that the marriage itself is the punishment.
Exactly. Although today I think there's a lot of reasons people might be driven to drink like that, but I mean, who knows? I mean, these licenses and permits, they're a great reflection when you talk to people that don't understand how the system has been set up, to demonstrate that we haven't been granted freedom. We've been granted privileges, and we've been given certain privileges in our own enslavement so that we continue to work within the system and to support the system and to let the money keep flowing up to the top. So basically what we have to do is start creating our own contracts in a way where it doesn't even have to be something that's just written down on some paper. It can be something that is an agreement. And it kind of brings me back to the old, and I talked to my grandfather and some, you know, people from, you know, the old school, and they're telling me about the day when they could literally trust another person with their word. Their word was their bond. And when you look around today, how many people their word is their bond these days? I mean, it's so frivolous. It's like a fast food drive-through in every aspect of our lives. And very few people hold themselves to those kinds of standards. And so what happens is that we're trained to rely on government or any of these other edifices in our society to provide us with these rules and regulations and licenses and permits and everything else so that we feel safe and so that we have no responsibility to, you know, really be in individuals with integrity and with honor and to be bound to our word and to be bound by our own agreements and contracts and currency between each other as human beings. So I think that it's really just about changing the paradigm of how we think about it, and maybe that'll help do something with this whole idea of maybe part of the reason why the divorce rate is so high is because that whole concept is misunderstood and it's not working for people. So it needs to evolve.
Now, in terms of an evolution, what exactly are we heading to here? Now, if anything, are we heading back the way we came? Are we heading to where the father was the provider, the breadwinner, there's homeschooling, and the mother would take care of a lot of that herself, and families together very strong in the community? I mean, like, if anything, it's kind of like the Amish situation. Because do you know how much family violence there is in the Amish communities? None. No reported incidents whatsoever. There's there's no autism, I think, apart from children that have been vaccinated before and then adopted in or were born into toxic chemical grounds or something like that and then adopted in, you know. There's a lot to be said for a lot of these things. It's about sort of like restraint on technology and the food, the purity, the very strong community, everybody working together as one single indivisible unit. Now, would it be possible with modern technology and our abilities and things of that nature to replicate this kind of community spirit in the modern day? not having to restrict access to every bit of news information and everything under the sun, but actually have a fully informed populace that has proper social cohesion to eliminate these difficult problems, this single mother epidemic, more or less the entire New World Order agenda, I guess, because everything that they've done to structure society at this point has meant not to bring us together, but to break us apart and divide us.
I think it's possible, and I think it doesn't have to be that we all go live in mud huts somewhere out in the wilderness with, like, you know, go back to the Stone Age. I think that actually if we were operating in harmony with the environment, in harmony with natural law, in harmony with understanding the true connection and communication and how it should operate between human beings, understanding rights and privileges like real rights, real, true, free rights that you all, you know, we all inherently possess. If we respect that and we understand how to respect that in others, then, you know, we could definitely make it work. I mean, I think the reason why the Amish communities are so successful is because they all share the same values. Now, that doesn't mean the whole human race has to share the same exact values or the same way of looking at things or the same cultural expressions. We should be diverse. We should be completely individually motivated, but at the same time, there is the rest of the community, the rest of the tribe, if you will, that you do have to consider. So there, I guess there's a lot of these things that would bring into this. What was that?
There's a culture, right? New Zealand, for example, we've got a country of like 4 million people here now, about maybe a quarter of that pretty significant are immigrants who've only just come here recently, like they weren't born here. And somebody was telling me the other day about we need to draft them into the New Zealand culture, you know, help them assimilate so that we can all, you know, be New Zealanders together. And somebody said, what culture? Right? And I was just like, whoa, that sounds really cynical, but it's also quite profound. We don't actually have any culture. Right? Does anybody else actually vibe in with this? Like the culture's just kind of dead. It's gone. It's been malnourished for so long that now it can't even support itself, and it just kind of dies off, and it gets replaced with a new culture that somebody else is creating, namely the government. How exactly can we create a culture that makes people want to excel, that helps them to, that encourages them to think freely and creatively, to reject authority whilst at the same time respecting your elders and people that are actually there to help you and what have you. I mean, if you had kids with that kind of motivation who respect you as long as you respect them, who are personally empowered and creative problem solvers.
Well, right, and knowledge, people need to remember that knowledge is the key to freedom and to peace and harmony, because if you look at it, a lot of the places that there's extreme poverty, there's a lot of crime, there's a lot of ignorance there as well, and some of it is generated, obviously, by people that just refuse to, you know, become knowledgeable and to leave that sphere of ignorance, but a lot of it is because of the fact that they're in a real crappy situation that has been, it's basically a product of the system that we all believe in so dearly, right? And what we need to do is think about this as, how are we going to start raising our children now? We're seeing them getting dumber and dumber and dumber and dumber. How is that in any way going to change or assist in getting rid of a lot of the crime and a lot of the so-called disorder that everybody's worried about if we were to move away from these authoritarian models that we rely on? We'd have to start thinking about education and knowledge as being the link to our freedom ultimately. So if you don't know, if the child is not raised with what it is to respect another person's rights and their sovereign space and their right to be who they are and express themselves as they are, and the whole golden rule, you know, treat others as you would have them treat you. And this idea that, you know, do no harm is really the only law that exists. It's just, there's many expressions. There's many ways that you need to educate them on where, you know, how that's applied. But ultimately, we don't need 30 plus thousand laws every year coming in from the government that even the people in Parliament and Congress can't even review before they sign off on them, that are mostly to do with commerce and mostly to do with expansion of the the neo-feudalist model that we're following, you know, every day and we're hurtling towards every day. So for people that are out there that are rejecting the notion of going back to some of these older principles, I think we really got to – that's just a start, is to go back to that. We really got to rethink this, because the direction we're headed is clearly going to be making things worse. If you look at the media, you look at the way that people's minds are molded and their whole – everything, their habitual nature is completely a product. It's a creation. And these corporations actually create that to get, you know, attachment to their products from consumers. They want you to become part of their culture that they're creating. That's why Levi's jeans, they create a whole brand and a feeling and a whole they have like quotations that they quote themselves, you know, Levi jeans. How can Levi jeans quote themselves? I don't understand that. And they create this whole tapestry of just propaganda, ultimately, that is there to pull you outside of you having your own individual culture, if you will, and having some connection to something related to this planet and this environment and the real human beings that are on them. And so if they got everybody invested in these things that are synthetic, that are artificial, that's why we're divided. That's why we're confused. That's why we see depression rates going up, is that we're moving more and more towards synthetic types of things as opposed to organic kinds of things. So I think what we're talking about here is trying to get back to something that is rooted in the human being, that serves our nature, which I believe is actually inherently good. People can argue with me, but I believe we are inherently good. I think that it's just our environment that has a great deal of influence on us. So I think these are some other things we've really got to discuss on that level.
I have a great anecdote, actually. I just posted it up on Facebook the other day. There was a protest in New Zealand about what's it called? Legal highs. Here we are. So we got a whole bunch of people out front of these tattoo parlors and everything that sell these little bags of fake weed and stuff like that. Legal high equals brain fry, no legal highs, it's the lowest of the low, you know, this kind of, you know, freaking out about it. And my question's simple. How many people have been killed by legal highs so far? Zero. How many have been killed by cannabis in 10,000 years? Zero. So why aren't these people out with signs saying, legalize cannabis already? This is getting ridiculous. You know? And I mean, who's the biggest enemy to their mind? People who make fake weed or people who ban real weed and chuck people into jail for possessing it? Right? Somebody else said down here, because I think this goes to your point about how we're substituting natural alternatives for artificial synthetic stuff, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it turns out, like, I was thinking about this just before, gentlemen, about regulation. Exactly how much is too much? And how exactly do you regulate and legislate for morons? You can't.
Well,
you have to educate
systems.
You've
got to let them be morons.
Okay, it's almost like...
You've got to let them be morons.
But there's no point, almost, in making any laws at all anymore, until such a point as you've gotten the population out of just a complete dull stupidity. Right? It's been dumbed down to such an extent.
What created a stupid populace in the first place?
The education, the legislation did. It's a vicious circle.
well, the whole thing goes back to natural law and the fact that I don't want to be cold about this, but stupid people used to not live very long. Stupid people generally didn't prosper, and stupid people bore the burdens of their stupidity. What we have now is a nanny state that has attempted to play to the lowest common denominator. Hence, that which you subsidize, you get more of. The old axiom of basic economics. And we've subsidized stupidity. We've created a nanny state. We've created clients of the state who have no real reason to bring themselves up to the level where they're of a grade of human being who can continue to survive in what is effectively kind of a brutal planet sometimes. you only have to look at what happens during a storm here in the United States to see how stupid people are. I'm supposed to feel sorry for and then subsidize through my taxes and insurance rates the stupidity of wealthy people who live along coastal lands, knowing full well that at least every few years a hurricane's going to come and it might be pretty flipping horrible. Contrast that with people who are made stupid and cannot provide for themselves, cannot work, cannot think, cannot function as rational human beings, and you have the cocktail for a society that is going to be taken over by the controllers. This has been engineered for a very long time.
Well, yeah, and look at what we do with those people now. You could call them. You look at a lot of what's taken place with the homeless populations and whatnot. I'm not saying all homeless people are stupid, by the way. I know a lot of really brilliant people that are homeless that they get stuff thrown at them every day because people assume they're drug addicts and all this kind of stuff. So I am not making a blanket statement there. But there are those areas of society where people are, they're not as intelligent. But at the end of the day, anybody that has even a little bit of intelligence can still be educated to a certain extent.
Maybe intelligence is the wrong word. Maybe just common sense.
Common sense. Well, exactly. But I mean, even the term intelligence, it's really referring to common sense if you think about it, because, you know, intelligence is made up of two words. It's made up of intellect and gents. And of course, the gents is talking more about the intuitive feminine quality, and the intel part is talking more about the masculine logical quality. So when you put the two together, you have intelligence. And so you have people on this planet that are extremely intellectual, that have a lot of technical left brain knowledge, and those people have no problem creating these synthetic vaccines and these plutonium tip warheads and all this kind of stuff, which is intellectually brilliant because they came up with it, they conceived it, they created it, and it makes magnificent on its own right, but it's a horrific technology that is used to obviously harm people. So it's not very intelligent. You know what I mean? So there's sort of that differential. And how do you balance that in a society? I think that honestly, it needs to be set up so that if you are what we're calling, you know, people that maybe are, they don't lean towards intelligence, let's just put it that way. I don't want to insult anybody, but it's clearly something that's there. They should be allowed to live in their situation. They shouldn't be completely rejected, but they also clearly are not going to be elevated to the highest level, but they should be free to be and express what they are, just as anybody should. And right now what we do is, as you were saying, Vinny, the system has created the standard. Here's the standard that we want that's really just centered around making sure you're an efficient worker for the system, because the people at the top, they've just written the entire human race off. They look at the entire human race as completely ignorant, stupid, useless eaters, blah, blah, blah. So they believe automatically that they are superior. We don't need to look at people that maybe suffer from either neurological disorders or whatever, or can't put two and two together properly. We don't need to look at ourselves as superior to them. We just need to look at them as almost like it's like special needs. They're people that have special needs, and they have the right to, you know, have a certain amount of assistance with those special needs. But right now we just throw them out on the street. And they're downtown. I go downtown Toronto. They're all over downtown Toronto. You go to Ottawa. They're all downtown Ottawa. I'm sure in New Zealand and where you are, Randy, it's always there. It's in the central hub because they want them there on display. Just like in the Middle Ages when they were in stocks and throwing tomatoes at these guys, they want them on display because they want them to be the example that you go, oh, man, I don't want to be living like that guy begging for change and sleeping on the street. Okay, so they're there as an example, and it's a fear tactic. But they pretend to care. The system pretends to care, but it doesn't give a shit, ultimately.
Yeah.
Right.
I just got an email.
Ask yourself,
oh, go ahead, Randy.
You ask yourself the question, why? I've thought this when I lived in New York City, and I thought this every time I've gone to Washington, D.C. Why do poor people live in cities? Does this make sense to live in a place that is 30% more expensive to live in? And that has the necessity to deal with municipal authorities. And after a while, you look at it and you go, there's something contrived about this. Well, there is, because most of the Western world went into this socialist state. They built tenements. They built apartment buildings, projects, which is how you wound up with all of these inner city projects in the first place where you had great clusters of people. A city is a cluster of people. It is basically a mini civilization into itself. And anybody that lives in a city or lives near a city knows that that unique culture is something that has in some way been economically influenced. And so we subsidized, again, the ability of people to live in tenement houses in cities rather than saying, you know, for a lot less money, it goes back to the old adage of teach a man to fish and he eats, you know, he can feed himself forever, as opposed to giving him a fish.
But exactly.
One of the things I heard in what you were saying, David, the view of culture, and bear that in mind, because what is culture? It's a petri dish. What are you doing when you have a culture where you're raising something you're attempting to control? A lot of this has to do with viewing of human beings in what could be called an elegant form of slavery as nothing more than economic units. Whether they are active or passive, it's all part of a machine, and it's all a machine that is managed by people at the global level who believe that they're smarter than the rest of humanity and wish to harvest the energy and the efforts of the collective.
I was thinking about the predatory nature of it and how they use people. What you're saying before is about kind of like, I guess, investing in the good in people, right? And one of my listeners said that psychopaths, they're just like people who are having an ongoing tantrum. Maybe if they just meditated and were shown some love and what have you, you know, they'd come right.
Right.
And I go, are you kidding me? Do you know what happens to anybody who's shown love or appreciation or affection or given something to psychopaths? They get used. Their kindness gets used as weakness, and they predatorily use it against you. Every time. It's happened over and over. You know, what this listener was suggesting has been tried a number of times. And guess who comes out on top? Not the person who tried to help the psychopath, by ripping you off or destroying your life in some way.
No, this is nothing more than technological feudalism is what it is.
Oh, exactly. And it's good that you brought up the idea of a psychopath, because we know there's obviously, primary psychopaths that are born and right from cradle to grave, they are psychopaths. They have a brain malfunction or a brain disorder. And then there's what you'd call secondary psychopaths, which are, you know, they've been sort of led into it through situations or traumatic events in their life. And there might be a little bit more hope for them, but, you know, it depends on how far down the road that they go. And what's interesting to me, I was talking to somebody about this the other day, which was that the system itself is built based on a psychopathic model. So who do you think is going to run to the top in a psychopathic system that is founded on a psychopathic model? And this can be proven. You watch that great documentary, The Corporation, where they had psychologists do a psychological analysis on a variety of Fortune 500 companies, and they came out with the diagnosis, yes, they are psychotic, they are exhibiting psychopathic behavior. So we live in a system that actually encourages and supports the psychopaths. So it's going to be the psychopaths that get to the top, because the good, everyday, average, well-meaning individual, ignorant or not ignorant, doesn't matter, you know, the well-meaning soccer moms and all that kind of stuff, they don't have what it takes to compete with the psychopath. Their virtue, in a sense, like you said, Vinny, on the micro level, is used against them. And it's the same thing on the macro level. So the system has been built by psychopaths for psychopaths. So we live in someone else's treehouse that made up these rules that reflect their mentality.
And the American medical – oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to finish up by saying that if you're going to try to apply your virtue onto that template, and that's the biggest curve I find people can't get their head around. They feel that, well, I'm not capable of doing these things. Why would these people do this? Why would the system be so aggressive and so psychotic? Well, that's because you're not a psychopath.
I say that to a lot of that's what I say to people all the time. You know, why would they do that? I just don't understand. Well, if you're a criminal psychopathic scumbag, you would. And you're like, oh, yeah, it would make a whole lot of sense. Oh, yeah. You know, and that's how the world is structured, more or less. I mean, because who writes the structure? It'd be the lawyers, the politicians, all of that. And American Medical Journal actually backs up your case, David, that this is a psychopathic world and mindset that propels psychopaths to the tops, because they did an analysis of particular types of work and things of this nature, where psychopaths tend to cluster, where not caring about other people, doing the wrong thing, lying, sabotaging your competition within the ranks and all of that kind of thing actually helps you get to the top. Being honest and caring and helping others pull them up and everything like that, that actually sabotages your career. These are the industries where they wind up. Law, medicine, business, politics, entertainment, and religion. If you were to look at any of the most influential institutions of our entire society, the things that actually make and govern our society and have it run, would it not be all of those? Right? So it's not just like a coincidence psychopathic thing. Our leaders are psychopathic. Our doctors are psychopathic. Our lawyers are psychopathic. I'm not saying all of them, but I'm saying enough so that they would get to the top and control in a top-down fashion those particular industries without even working for anybody else, without even being part of any secret societies. This happens all on its own, as well as the secret societies and stuff like that, all on top, recruiting the best and the brightest of the psychos, you know? They got us really, really well stitched up.
Yeah, that's perfect, because then that's why the pyramid is a great symbol for people to wrap their heads around when you really just look at the way every institution you just mentioned, Vinny, is structured. And of course, there are people at the top of that pyramid that have more knowledge and knowledge of very particular things. They have knowledge of human psychology in a way that human beings themselves have very little of. They have knowledge of technology, which they themselves have created and work endlessly 24/7 through black projects and all kinds of clandestine activity to harness the forces on this planet in almost the way that you could compare it to a brand of sorcery, if you were to use an old medieval term, as opposed to something that would be more useful to help benefit mankind. Clearly, the system is not there to benefit mankind. Clearly, your government, and you don't need me to pile a bunch of documents on your desk and throw a whole bunch of documentaries at you to prove this. You can judge, you can know them by their actions. You can see that they say one thing and they do another. Trademark psychopathic tendency. And this is the way it's reflected all the way through. So there's levels of compartmentalization all the way up to the top, where you reach the real primary psychopaths that are at the top, and they want to be at the top. They want to structure it because the psychopathic mind loves hierarchy. They love hierarchy as opposed to holarchy, which is holistic. It's it's the Knights of the Round Table ideology. It's the circular spiral-like ideology that's actually modeled after the structure of the universe. So I would actually say for people, our system is not modeled after the structure of the universe, okay? And you should be dictating your thought patterns, your life, based on the way nature functions, based on the Fibonacci sequence, based on the structure of the patterns of nature, based on the way that the galaxy spirals and is moving constantly. And I tell people this as well, is that when your thinking becomes stagnant, look at what happens to water. And I mean, and we're what, 70, 80% water? So it's actually a really good analogy. When water becomes stagnant, it becomes swampy and it becomes polluted easily. But when it's moving, it's constantly flushing and cleansing and it's alive and vibrant and it's transitioning and it's a current, right? Well, if we were to structure our thinking patterns in our society in a way that's flexible, that's adaptive, that's allowing for spontaneity, that's allowing for creativity, that supports those things, then we would see the human race thrive. But no, we have it the other way around. We have the hierarchical psychotic model, and psychopaths love hierarchy. And even good people who aren't psychopaths, they fall for that stuff too, because they've been brainwashed and they've believed the lie given to them by the system that hierarchy will keep you safe. And isn't that the number one sales pitch of every politician, of every party, of every country in history, is that I'm doing this to protect you. Isn't that the number one line they give us?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, it's called the Evil Archy. It's a mixture of evil, the monarchy, and malarkey.
Exactly.
I think just sitting here listening to you talking, because you guys are really good at riffing through, you know, this whole psychopathic New World Order Illuminati thing. Then the next question becomes, how do you change this? Each one of us, as people who are speaking out publicly about this, have a model of our own lives that we constantly hone and refine. And a lot of this means that we are constantly in states of separating from things. How do you get a psychopath out of your life? Well, you get a psychopath out of your life by getting them the hell out of your life. You inoculate yourself. You cut them. Somebody who's married to a psychopathic spouse has no choice. You will not change that spouse. You will not change that relationship. So basically what has to happen is you have to find a way to separate. At the same time, based on the model that we have now, most people are in a codependent relationship with their controllers. They feel like they need them. They feel like they need the police, the military, the banks, the Monsantos. What do we do to move the conversation towards what we would call a new culture? How do we model this new culture?
Well, I could just jump in real quick. Oh, sorry, Vinny. Okay, cool. I just want to say quick, one very important word the entire human race needs to learn ASAP, and it's the word no, okay? And there's two versions of that word, isn't there? It sounds the same when it comes out of your mouth.
Right.
It's N-O, which means no, piss off. I'm not going to take your bullshit anymore, and I'm not your slave, and I'm not your punching bag, and I'm not your emotional dumpster and all that kind of stuff, okay? So no. You need to put your line in the sand, like Gandalf smashing that, you shall not pass. I love that scene. It's the best scene in any movie ever. You got to get used to that mentality. You got to become a warrior in your life. Okay. You have to be empowered. So it takes a strong, brave, courageous person to get acquainted with that first expression of that word, no. The other expression of that word, of course, is K-N-O-W, knowledge. If you have knowledge and you know, you're not in a state of believing or I wonder what I should do, and you're flip-flopping back and forth, then you're prey. You're prey for these psychopaths because they look for weaknesses constantly. That's their mind. Their brain is like a scanner. It's just scanning for weakness constantly. So if you're strong, if you're firm, and you're rooted in knowledge as opposed to ignorance, I'd say that's a good place to start. That's my opinion.
And in order to achieve this, you know, the thing is, we've got our objectives, right? But how to achieve it? I say the New World Order had it really good. They forcibly took children away from their parents and shoved them into public schools. They had a forceful education, and that changed the entire culture from being independent and not appealing to authority to being dependent and appealing to authority. So in one generation, you can change the entire direction of humanity from freedom to pestilence or pestilence to freedom. It's just a question of how exactly you get all of those children. And it has to be kind of like almost not one child excluded sort of thing, indoctrinated to believe that freedom is a good thing, that only appealing to authority and having no evidence to back up your faith in people who claim to have authority over you is a bad thing, which is more or less the opposite of the current education system. So what if education reform, radical education reform, what if the public was still funding this education and everything that doesn't teach anybody anything and just dumbs them the frack down? What if it was completely, utterly changed to something that was actually beneficial, something that was communal rather than isolated, something that actually incorporated the parents and the children and the teachers and community resources and things of that nature. What if kids were taken on a field trip just to walk around their local town and go into shops and everything like that and ask the shopkeeper what it is that they do and the intricacies of their job to advance their curiosity, their creativity, and their ability to understand the world? You know, there's so many simple things that basic parenting skills that have been lost since the introduction of education that I think could actually be incorporated into it anyway, rather than being educators, we're people who are there that are basically your parents, you know, more or less. We're there to watch out for you. We're there, here to teach you about the threats that you'll face in this world and so on and so forth, so you don't get yourself killed, more or less, including psychopathic scumbags who might be trying to educate you into believing something that's going to wind up getting you killed is a good thing.
Where do I sign, Vinny? Because it's brilliant. I love it. And that's what we exactly need to do. And actually, just a little side note, I'm working with a brilliant woman here in Canada. Her name is Dr. Carmen Bolther. Some of you might have heard of her work. She is actually the director and, you know, featured producer of The Pyramid Code, which is available on Netflix now. And she did a lot of work on Egypt and ancient Egypt and a lot of kinds of work there. But her main project right now, she used to be involved with the Calgary University in Calgary here in Canada. And she is now writing her own curriculum, her own online university, which is called Interactive U. And it is based on what you're talking about, Vinny. It's based on learning, knowledge, having the ability to create. It's all available online. The platform is going to be up soon. And you know what? There's all kinds of great people out there that are putting these kinds of things together. Communal type educational centers that are there to enhance learning and open-mindedness and giving children the tools so that they can go find the answers themselves. See, this is a big thing that's not happening in school, is that the answers are being given to them in a sense where they're like, you need to answer either A or B, or you're either right or you're wrong. I'm going to mark you that you passed or you failed. It's not about knowledge. Isn't like that though. All of us, we're on this journey of knowledge. And I don't know if any of you, you're never going to get it right the first time. And it's a process of continuing growth and study and evolution and, you know, constant movement, right? So we have to base it off of that. We have to change that. So if we can really start there, absolutely. We got to get to the young people, because sometimes I talk to some of the people, and I'm not trying to offend anybody from an older generation or anything, but some people are very, very, you know, strong, and those belief systems are deeply entrenched and calcified in their brain, and it's extremely difficult to get them to change their paradigm.
Yeah, so the Jesuits had it sussed, I think.
Exactly. They knew exactly what they were doing.
Yeah, no, and what if you say you use the tactique of an evil organization like the Jesuits, for example, to brainwash kids into knowing that they're brainwashed, and then just going, "Oh my God, I was totally brainwashed, and now everything else is BS." You know, I'm a fan of inversion. You take whatever is that is totally effed and do the exact opposite, and then you wind up oftentimes with a solution, don't you?
Kind of like when you listen to a politician talk about something, you just hear what they're saying and then know that, well, probably the opposite of that is going to be true.
Yeah, that's the world we live in now. So basically what we could do is we could tell people, look, we're going to forcibly indoctrinate you. We're going to make you appeal to authority and not care about your community or anything like that. And we're going to dumb you down. And also we're totally going to allow all the kids to tease your child and make their life a living hell. Okay. It'll be just like normal school. And they go like, yeah, sign me up. And they go, ha. We're actually going to turn them into some free-thinking kids that are going to be like infected with this brain power, and they're going to like go home and infect their parents with it. Their parents will go like, "Oh my God, I suddenly was realizing. I was wondering today, honey, are we schmucks? Like, are we just like totally retarded?" She's like, "Oh my God, we are totally freaking retarded. Maybe we should do something about that." Well, apparently the best thing to stop yourself from being so freaking retarded is by realizing just how freaking retarded you are.
Maybe it'll work. I don't know, man. Something has to be tried. Something.
I mean, let's just not do nothing. You know, I mean,
yeah.
nothing could be possibly worse than what's happening right now. I mean, like,
even, let's start with that idea and build on it.
I mean, you know, maybe we could have like a whole bunch of them. You know, there could be like a Spartan school or something like that, where you get cast out into the wilderness and expect to fend for yourself for several months at a time or something like that. You either come back or you don't, and then you get a diploma.
Tell them Justin Bieber is going to be their math teacher, and they'll show up in droves, man.
Yeah. Ooh, okay, now, how many babies am I saying now? Oh, baby, baby, baby. Oh, sounds like a golfer caught in my lawnmower.
Oh, man.
No, there's some extraordinary pain and frustration going on right deep at the heart at me that I just want to get out and make jokes about because it'll distract me from just how frustrated and full of pain I really am. And I think this is the same thing that happens with kids, really. You basically go out and you go to school and you get freaking traumatized, you know? School was really traumatic for me, bro. There was this one time when six or seven or something? I forget. Real young. And I was at a Catholic school, St. Francis, and I think like about five, six, maybe even eight kids, I can't remember exactly, were like attacking me and shit, and I bit one of them. And that kid who was attacking me went and complained to the principal that I bit them. And so the principal hung a sign around my neck that said dog bite and marched me through the entire school in front of everybody during lunchtime. That sound like cruel and unusual punishment to you? You know?
No, that's shame and humiliation, which is social control. That's actually that's right. the model. The new model is basically shaming and publicly shunning people who behave in socially unacceptable ways. Here, I mean, look, all you got to do now is light up a cigarette out in public somewhere and you will see this in action, because they've spent the last 30 years not addressing, by the way, an addiction or a health problem, addressing a social issue. Just like when we were talking earlier about cannabis and why this culture is so attuned to a particular agenda. I mean, it's amazing to me how you can shift perceptions in roughly about a generation. And if you just look back on the gay liberation movement, the women's liberation movement, you will see how they push the barometer for good or for bad. I'm not judging any of this right now. I'm saying that what you're dealing with, especially when you're dealing with an institution like a public school, is basically a social incubator designed to inculcate and install certain programs that are socially acceptable for the agenda at that time. And it shifts from generation to generation.
When they want, the ultimate goal here is obedience. That's what they want. They want people to learn about obedience. And there's just a lot of ways that they do it. And if you disagree with that, just look around, folks. Look around at the people that you interact with on a daily basis. They are not expressing their uniqueness. They're not expressing their own individual ideas. They're not expressing their own creativity.
In fact, they attack you for doing so.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, you need to provide me evidence of all the things that you're saying. I'm like, listen, I'm expressing my uniqueness. What are you doing? You're going and repeating the mainstream line that you've been told. At least, you know, is there anybody out there that's actually these days having an original thought? Like, how did paintings that have never been painted before happen? How did a song that was never written before that inspired entire generations of people, how did that come into being?
These are artists. These are people that are considered either brilliant or insane or some combination of the two. That's actually what a real original artist is. They will be considered insane or eccentric.
Well, I think that was it Marcus Aurelius or someone from a long time ago, anyways, I'm sure many have said it, is that the goal here is to get as far away from this whole, you know, I'm not even quoting the guy now. But it was something to the effect of, you know, getting away from the mainstream thought process, right?
Breaking
like
away
pulling
from
yourself
the herd.
Out of the herd. And you're trying to run from that as fast and as hard as you can. And the people that are part of that herd, they're going to be like, what's wrong with you? You're crazy. You're insane. You're running away from everything that we are, because they identify their entire reality with that with that whole way of being. And these types of artists and these types of brilliant people that have shown their light throughout history, they're the ones that are abused by our culture and by our society, because the majority of the people have been sucked into one form of ultimately mental dictatorship and colonization of the mind, whether it expresses itself on a physical level or not. And there's a variety of ways that that happens. Ultimately, this is about colonization of the mind, because if an intelligent, well-educated, and I really mean educated, like we're talking those logical psychopaths here, if they have knowledge that is more advanced, they can use that as a weapon. Whereas what the real thing is, what these artists are trying to do, you look at these Alex Grays and these people that just they blow people's minds with something that's totally unique.
Yeah.
And they're not tapped into that one iota, but they might seem weird and odd and kind of out there. But that's just because we're surrounded by people that are like-minded.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of colonization. It's more like colonization, like to make you think like an asshole.
Yeah, but somebody shoved their foot up your ass is basically what's happened.
Yeah, I've had my head up my ass for so long. All I can do is think shit.
I want to take a break here. We're going to play some music. Everybody can take a break. Go.
Well, by the way, there's a song to actually illustrate what we were just talking about like smokers and everything else there. Guilty by the Pakehachis. If you download it right there across the Skype and play that, man, it's going to be freaking awesome.
What is it again?
Guilty by the Pakehachis.
Send me a link.
It's in the chat.
It's in the chat. The Skype chat.
I don't know if I can legally play it or not.
You can. We fully originally made it, so I hereby give you copyright permission.
Send me the link on Skype.
You didn't have to sign a copy. You didn't have to sign a copyright agreement and all that.
Yeah, well, I'm always getting banned from YouTube for playing supposedly copyrighted music. Anyway, let's take a break here and do some music. Guys, stay on the line, and we'll be back in a few minutes with Man Talk 6 on Off Planet Radio. We'll be right back.